It's a big warning for ETF investors. And on today's show, if you own ETFs, I'll show you why you should be worried. I'm your host, Steve Van Meter, and thanks for joining me today. As money is pouring into low-cost ETFs, even the ETF providers are starting to get concerned, particularly ahead of Wednesday's FOMC announcement, where the Fed is expected to make a massive pivot. And perhaps when they do, well, the stock market may not like it. Let's pick this story up as we head over to the Wall Street Journal, where headlines ETF inflows top $1 trillion for the first time. A record share of funds goes to actively manage ETFs, with many having just few assets. Historic surge of cash has swept into exchange-traded funds, spurring asset managers to launch new trading strategies that could be undone by a market meltdown. This year, inflows into ETFs worldwide crossed the $1 trillion mark for the first time at the end of November, surpassing last year's total of $735.7 billion, according to Morningstar. That wave of money, along with rising markets, pushed global ETF assets to nearly $9.5 trillion, more than double where the industry stood at the end of 2018. Most of that money has gone into low-cost U.S. funds to track indices run by Vanguard Group, BlackRock, Inc., and State Street Corp., which together control more than three-quarters of all U.S. ETF assets. Analysts said rising stock markets, including a 25% lift for the S&P 500 this year and a lack of high-yielding alternatives, have boosted interest in such funds. And I want to key to the point of this article is that all these funds, all this money, at least a lion's share of it, is going into major U.S. equity indices, and that's a huge problem. Let's keep going here. Because you have this historical presence where you have tremendous equity markets and more investors have made their way into index products, said Rich Powers, the head of ETF and index product management at Vanguard. And here you can see, looking at SPDR or SPDR, S&P 500 ETF Trust, if you look at the top six holdings, you've got Apple, Microsoft, Amazon, Google, Tesla, and Facebook represent 25.6% of all holdings. How about QQQ or the NASDAQ 100? It's got Apple, Microsoft, Amazon, Tesla, NVIDIA, and Google represent 48.9% of all holdings, and that is the issue. See, in a rising market, this isn't a problem because more money piling in means they go up faster. But in a down market, what is the issue if somehow liquidity were to disappear or the Fed were to have a massive change in heart about easing and move into a tightening cycle in a short period of time? Well, that's usually not good for the equity markets. And when things go down and people start to sell, well, what's going to happen is people are all going to start selling the same thing. And that is the issue, because here we can see from advisor perspectives, investor credit and markets, not only are investors cramming into these ETFs along the major market indices, they're buying them on margin. So they're borrowing money and cramming into these six stocks at a record pace never seen before. And why are they doing it? Well, it's simple. Buybacks are hitting record after pulling back in 2020, and the trend is expected to continue as S&P 500 companies top $234 billion in the third quarter. So as you know, investors are shoveling money into these ETFs and these major indices, companies are helping them out, saying, hey, we got your back. But what if they don't have your back? In fact, do you remember what happened on Friday? If you missed the show, I'll tell you, well, we hit the quarterly corporate share buyback blackout window. And now all that flow is at least stopped for the time being. Let's continue on here, because companies in the S&P 500 repurchased $234.5 billion in shares during the third quarter, topping the previous record of $223 billion in the fourth quarter for 2018, according to preliminary data from the S&P Dow Jones Indices. The wave of share repurchases has helped propel U.S. stock indices to dozens of records in 2021, and the S&P 500, as we've noted, being up 25% this year with 67 record closes, thanks to, of course, buybacks. And more are coming, according to Howard Silverblatt, senior index analyst at S&P Dow Jones Indices. He said projects that S&P 500 buybacks will reach $236 billion in the fourth quarter. And well, Howard, they're done for the quarter. And here we can see buybacks are just one of the forces behind the stock market's rally. Asset prices have continued to benefit from the monetary and fiscal support that policymakers put in place to help the economy get through the pandemic. And analysts have consistently underestimated corporate earnings, which are expected to grow at 45% in 2021. Now, we do know that corporate earnings have lagged, But now you see the issue. It's all this money flowing back from corporations who really don't need the cash. In fact, that's a problem that, well, Congress is going to be addressing. Let's take a look. As stock buybacks have come under fire from politicians who say companies should use cash to invest in their businesses instead of supporting their share prices. The version of the $2 trillion education, healthcare, and climate spending package that passed the House in November would create a 1% tax. Wow, 1% on the net value of a company's stock buyback. And here you can ask, if question, if you want to know, why are the companies buying their stock back? Because this is going to be a bigger topic coming forward as the government looks to find money to fill in all these deficit holes. Well, people are saying, why don't they invest that into the economy or into their company? And the answer is they don't need to. So they're just cycling it back to the shareholders. And here you can see capacity utilization is, well, just a little bit over 75%, maybe around 76, 77%. And so what it's telling us is that these companies do not need to invest in infrastructure because we're not maxing out their factories. Now, if capacity utilization was up here in the 80s, you know, maybe 80 to 85%, yeah, they would need to expand production. And maybe, you know, add capacity. They don't need to. And so now we run into this issue is the U.S. consumer prices are climbing at the fastest annual rate since 1982. And with that, of course, on Wednesday, we've got a big Fed meeting. And well, what is the Fed going to react to? See, in the past, I want you to be thinking about this, is the Fed, you know, kind of jumped to the rescue, you know, of the market, you know, when stocks went down. But now that inflation is rising, can they do that? And I want you to be thinking, if you're invested in these major U.S. equity indices and you're concerned about any downside risk, well, be sure to check out Portfolio Shield. You won't regret your time if you do, because there's no other strategy out there that I've seen that hedges risk of the major equity indices like it does. But let's go back to the story of inflation, because it's going to hit big on Wednesday. And here we can see, of course, that consumer price index climbed 6.8% from November 2020, according to the data released on Friday that we covered. Of course, this widely followed inflation gauge rose 0.8%, which is huge, from October, exceeding forecasts and extending the trend of sizable increase that began earlier this year. And you can see then charts, these numbers are just way out of historical norms, at least that we've seen in decades. And so how do you feel the Fed about inflation, according to the Wall Street Journal, who's asking, the answer will help determine its longevity. And well, will one factor in inflation is whether Americans expect it to keep rising? But it's hard to gauge those sentiments. Well, Wall Street Journal, it's not. Supply chain disruptions, labor shortages, and climbing oil prices have pushed inflation to a 39-year high, but attention is now focused on another variable. Do people think it'll be here for a while? And I'll tell you, the answer is always is yes. Even when inflation is low, people think it's going to go up. When it goes up, people think it's going to go up more. That doesn't change at all. But here we go, because people's expectations can factor into inflation, and the answer plays a critical role in determining how the Federal Reserve and the administration manage rising numbers and how soon the Fed and how much they will raise interest rates. And so psychology is one reason the Federal Reserve is likely to signal faster into bond buying. Now, why is the psychology an issue? Because if consumers think prices are going up and there's something they want to buy, what do? They go buy it now. And so they borrow money, buy it now. And by borrowing money, they create new money into the economy. And buying it now, they remove that inventory off the shelves. And what does that lead to? Higher inflation. But the issue is, what if consumers don't borrow money to buy these higher products? What if they reject it because, well, they decide they don't want it? Well, all this plays into the psychology here. And so as we see here, the psychology is likely to signal faster into the bond buying, a quicker start to raising interest rates at its meetings with this week. Quote, this is about well-anchored inflation expectations, said Vice Chairman Richard Clarida at a question and answer session at the Cleveland Fed 2 weeks ago. Quote, getting actual inflation down close to 2% is going to be an important part of keeping those expectations anchored. Now, keep in mind, just moments, you know, it seems like months ago, 2% was a problem. And the Fed says, you know, they may have trouble getting all this figured out. The Wall Street Journal says this could be a problem, but really? If we just go over to the University of Michigan and look at inflation expectations, talk about a great survey that tells you that, yeah, that 1 year inflation expectations are high and consumers are concerned about it. But over the long run, yeah, not so much. In fact, we could go back into the early 2000s to see where inflation expectations over a 5 to 10 year window were higher, even back in the 90s. So consumers believe it's transitory, which could lead them to cut spending. But is the Fed the main culprit? Well, I normally don't cover opinion articles, except this one was written by a former Fed official. So let's check it out. And no, it wasn't Janet Yellen. The central bank has enabled price increases that may soon pose a risk to financial stability. Inflation is a choice. It's a choice for which the Fed is chiefly responsible. Not that I completely agree with that statement at all. The risk of an inflationary spiral rises when policymakers first dismiss the problem and then cast blame elsewhere. Inflation becomes embedded in the price formation process when the central bank acts belatedly or with insufficient conviction. To date, the Fed has acted as an enabler. When monetary policy is too tight, it slows aggregate demand. When monetary policy is too loose, it damages aggregate supply. Extraordinarily aggressive monetary policy, which we could argue at $120 billion a month we're doing now, namely quantitative easing, discourages investment in real assets like capital equipment relative to financial assets such as stocks. That's why non-residential capital investment in the real economy, things like port modernization, is running 7% below the pre-pandemic trend and 25% below trend since the advent of QE. A more exuberant stock market and a less resilient real economy are both consequences of the Fed's extant policy regime. And achieving a soft economic landing at this stage is difficult. Now, this is what I want you to focus on. You know, can the Fed pull this off? I mean, do you understand they're trying to let the air out of the balloon and not blow everything up? That's what you should be worried about. And that's why I wanted to start today's show out by, you know, kind of go over into the problem with these ETFs is everyone's crammed in them and everyone owns the same stock. And Fed gets this wrong, that's a huge issue. Let's keep going. If the sole task were to drive inflation down, the Fed would act immediately, would immediately taper its asset purchases and start raising rates. But a significant tightening cycle would likely cause market volatility, to surge and assets to reprice. Whoops, that's going to be a problem. The authorities have expressed little concern about financial excess bubbles or financial imbalances. Hope they're right. I expect tension between the Fed's goals of price stability and financial stability to be sharper relief in the new year. Now, I want to know from you, if you hit the community tab, do you think the Fed can handle managing price stability and financial stability? Can they bring price stability down and maintain financial stability? I want to know what you think. Cast your vote. All right, let's keep going, because stocks are down ahead of the Federal Reserve decision. No surprise there. And is the Fed seen delivering one of the most hawkish pivots in years? Well, that's going to happen. Chair Jerome Powell told lawmakers on November 30th it would be appropriate to consider speeding up the taper into a few months earlier. That would be end of March, than the originally planned conclusion mid-2022. And rate hikes are coming, according to this Bloomberg survey of economists from early December. Faster growth and inflation make accelerated increases in rates likely. So I want you to see GDP growth longer term, slowing, unemployment rate rising, PCE inflation, which is a form of the similar to the consumer price index, slowing down from current 2021, core PCE inflation slowing. And why do you see, my friends, I want you to say, why do you see we're back at the racetrack? Why do you see yields this morning heading lower? Well, because what does the bond market trying to tell you? Future growth and inflation expectations, 30-year bond, interest rates heading lower, telling you that's the reason why you see during tapers, interest rates fall. It has nothing to do with the Fed buying less. In faster bond taper, the pace of reductions may double to about $30 billion monthly. That's the expected announcement, and that would make sense to end the program at the end of March. And of course, the Fed hike scene starting with the yield curve flattest in a generation. Of course, high inflation is pushing the Fed to move faster, but the flattening curve is already ringing alarm bells. And this is it, another alarm bells of the Fed potentially breaking things. And I want you to see this last piece here, because it just ties this whole show up perfectly. Here you see, quote, usually the Fed raises rates until they break something, and the flattening yield curve is suggesting it won't take much to break something. Maybe just a move to 1% and we'll start seeing breakage, according to Jim Bianco, president of Bianco Research, said on Bloomberg Television, a guy I follow on Twitter, and perhaps you should too. All right, with that, thanks for being fans. Thanks for supporting the show. Appreciate all of you. Of course, we'll see you back on Wednesday to see whatever Powell comes out with, of course, we already pretty much know what it's going to be with the balance sheet taper, but will he surprise markets and accelerate it even quicker? Well, that's the question, but we'll be back on Wednesday to answer it. I'm Steve Van Meter. Thanks for watching. Bye now. The content of this video provides educational information only. It's not intended to provide investor or other advice. This video is not to be construed as a recommendation or solicitation by or selling security, financial instrument, or to participate in any particular trading strategy. This video was prepared by Steve Van Meter. Personal capacity, opinions expressed video that I'm own and do not reflect the value of Alice Financial Advice Inc. or Steve Van Meter Financial.